Okay, we begin here on the top of Samachal and Aleph, six lines down. Amar Rav Papa, Obed Kochavim Adano, Yisrael Akuba Chamra Asir. So if you have the Obed Kochavim who's working the barrel, and the Jew who's holding the pitcher, then the wine is problematic. So here you have a Goy who's pouring with the barrel, the wine, into the pitcher, and the Jew is steadying the pitcher or holding the pitcher into which the wine is coming. Over there you have a problem. My time. What's the reason that there's any problem here at all? The Goy is not in contact with the Yayin. Because when he's pouring it, it's coming from the strength or the action of the Obed Kochavim. Now then, Israel Adano, the Jew is controlling the barrel, Obed Kochavim Akuba, and the non-Jew is holding the pitcher or steadying the pitcher, Chamra Shari. Then the wine is fine. So here you have, depending on who's controlling the flow of the wine, that's the person that will determine whether the wine is okay or the wine is not okay. If the Goy is controlling it and pouring it, it's problematic. On the other hand, if the Jew is pouring it, then there's no problem at all. Now Rashi says over here, Chamra Asur Behana'a. The wine over here, when we say that the Goy is pouring it, is Asur Behana'a. Dainu Nami Yain Shemazgo Obdei Kochavim. That's the equivalent of Mizug, where the Goy is diluting the wine, but Kocho, and it's his strength over there too. When he was diluting the wine, he was pouring something into the wine. It was his koach. And over there, we make it a sur because, not that there's anything inherently wrong, but because of distancing, putting some separation between the possibility of something going wrong and that the goy being involved. So over here, where the goy is pouring the barrel, so he's not in contact with the wine. So if he's not in contact with the wine, there shouldn't have been any problem. But as Rashi notes, Kocho raises the issue that we already noted back on Daf Nun Chet Amud Bet, where the Chachamim and the Amoraim said, in that instance, we are going to be gozer out to the possibility that he might touch it, that he might actually do it with wine, or that Mishum Benotehem, all the reasons that we gave over there. Now, if you do go back there, Rashi actually does not say that. Rashi back on Daf Nun Chet Amud Bet says, Afagav Delo Noga, even though he didn't touch it, Gazru Rabbanan Bikocho, Lasro Bishtiya, to make it asur in drinking. Mishum Harchakat Aveira, in order to distance from Aveira. Avo Bahana'a Vade Lo Mitzar. But here, there's no problem of getting Hana'a. Delo Adiv Nigia Yidei Devar Acher Shlo Bikavana. It's no different than touching something through a medium of some sort. We have no intent for coming into contact with the wine, which is what we saw back on Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, the case of Luluiva, the case where the Lulav touches the wine. So Rashi, back on Nun Chet Amud Bet, says that the problem is only a problem of Shtia, yet over here on Samach says that the problem is a problem of Hana'a as well, and actually goes to two different Lishonot that are found in Rashi. And this, you can see in the Bali Tosafot, he say, quotes Rashi over here, says, Ulufi oto perush, sheperesh el gabi yayin shemazgo, based on the perush that Rashi gave back on Nun Chet Amud Bet, deinu asur b'ana, that it's not asur b'ana, only asur b'shtia, yesh tomar sheyesh lachmir kan yoter. Here there's a reason to be more machmir, sheyesh litlot sheiriku b'kavanat nisuch. Because there's a possibility that he's pouring it out with the intent of creating nisuch chayayin. And therefore, you would differentiate. But if you do go back there, the Balei Tosafot do bring that there was an alternate Rashi back on Nun Chet Amud Bet. Because he quotes the Rashi that we have as Bisvarim Acherim. That in other Svarim, that's where. Minimtzav Peirush Acherim Shel Rashi Asur Bishtia. But it is Mutar Behana'a. So there was a Rashi that existed, that wasn't the Rashi B'Perush Acherim, back on Nun Chet Amud Bet, that said it was also Asur B'Hana'a. So that means that there were two versions of Rashi on Nun Chet Amud Bet, and the Rashi over here seems to accord with the Rashi that Balei Tosafot call the Rashi, or the regular Rashi. That's Asur B'Hana'a in both cases. But then he brought a Perush Acherim of Rashi, which is actually the Perush of Rashi that we have in our Gemaras on Nun Chet Amud Bet, but it was only Asur B'Shtia, not Asur B'Hana'a. So either you would have to say here that Rashi would say the same thing, and it's only Asur Bishtiyah, not Asur Bana. And the reason would be that over here, he is pouring the wine, and the Jew is watching him, so there's no reason to believe that he did anything untoward over here. Therefore, it's only going to be asur b'shtia. It's not going to be asur b'hana'a. And even given the harchaka is only with regards to shtia, not with regards to hana'a. Or, like the Baal Tosfot suggests over here, there's more reason to be osir over here. And given that, you even though back there, by meziga, b'meziga, you would say that it's asur b'shtia, here you would say it's asur b'hana'a as well, because he's pouring the wine out of the barrel, as opposed to the meziga, where there's kocho, but he's pouring the water into the wine to be mezig the wine. Here's actually pouring the wine. And the pouring of the wine is much more precarious because of the fact that he could be doing it l'nisuch hayayin. That's a classic case of nisuch hayayin, is to pour a wine libation. And given that, maybe there's more room to be machmir over here. But then the Baal Tosfot would add, aval, im se'el lo Yisrael, if a Jew helps him in the process of pouring, hakol mutar ve'af b'shti'a, then it's totally mutar even to drink it. Anywhere we say that the koach, the energy, the exertion of the goy makes the wine problematic, if there's any other koach, any other force that is involved, then it is mutar. Asur. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't have the goy doing it and then helping him out. Rather, you should do it alone because of the possibility or the risk that we will see later on Daf Ayin Bet Amud Bet, that if you're helping the goy, and that's what's making it mutar, you might slip, or something might happen where all the weight might shift to the goy, and then in the end, the goy is doing everything. So if two of you are doing it together, and then you hands slip off the barrel, then he's left holding it alone. And then you have a problem that he's pouring it alone. So you have a decent amount of risk that something could go wrong if you're doing it together, which is that you could fall away, you could have something happen to you that would leave all the weight or the bearing on the goy, and that would cause a problem for you. There's two big important points here, one of which is here that the koach of the Oved Kochavim does create a problem. What that problem is, whether it's an Isur Shtia or an Isur Hana'a, has to do with Rashi's comparison to the Gemara Nunchen Amud Bet, and what Rashi said over there by Meziga, is it only Asur B'Shtia, or is it also Asur B'Hana'a? But it just suggests that even if it was only a Asur B'Shtia there, maybe it should be a Asur B'Hana'a here because there's koach pouring the wine itself. And then we noted that if there's any other koach involved, then you can remove the problem of the koach of Oved Kochavim by having a Jew participate and do it alongside of him. But we don't like you to do that l'chatchila because of the risk. The burden might lay totally on the goy at some point, and that would create a problem. V'im mitzadeh tzdudeh. So here, in this latter case, where it's the Jew that's pouring out of the barrel, and it's the goy that's holding the pitcher, if he moves it, asir, then it's problematic. Tzudeh means to shift it, to move it, to lean it. He does some action with the pitcher, that makes it problematic. Rashi brings two interpretations as to what the problem is here, by mitzadeh tzudeh. He brings, first of all, ubekubam le'askinan. We're dealing with a pitcher that is completely full. Dilma naga. The problem there is that maybe he came into contact with the wine. If the wine is already at the point where it's reached the top of the pitcher, and then he moves it, then there's a possibility that he touched the wine that was there because it's so high in the pitcher. And so that negia is what we're worried about. Now, lishna achrino, he says there's another version over here. Afilu chaseira nami. Even if the pitcher is not completely full, there is a problem. Came into mekarkesh bikavana. Because he's shaking it or moving it intentionally. Havile kimo bikavana. It's as if he's doing it intentionally. V'asur bishti'a. And therefore it's problematic to drink it. It won't be asur bahana'a, but will be asur bishti'a. And that is because when he shakes it, there is wine inside of the utensil, and that shaking of it creates the equivalent of a mishachshech, this movement or some sort of touching of the wine through that movement. So over here, Rashi, in one interpretation, says that the pitcher has to be full so that he has maga, that he actually has contact with the wine, and that contact with the wine is what the problem is over here. Rashi, in numerous places, indicates that contact with the wine only makes it a asur b'shtia. So obviously over here, he believes that it's not only a asur b'shtia, but also a asur b'hana'a, because came into contact with wine and he could do shikshuch. So that already makes it that it's a asur b'hana'a. In the second case, then mikarkesh, where he's moving it and it's moving the wine around inside of the utensil, but he's doing it intentionally. He's moving the wine around. He's moving the pitcher intentionally to move the wine or shake the wine. There he could have intent that that movement of the wine or that shaking of the wine is in the intent of some sort of nisuch ayayin, and that would make it asur bishti'ah. So those are the two possibilities Rashi brings. The Ramban basically favors Rashi's interpretation, but also brings an additional interpretation, which is when the Jew is pouring from the barrel into the pitcher, and the goy is holding the pitcher, he can move the pitcher to a situated where it's not falling to the base of the pitcher, rather hitting the wall of the pitcher. And if he has his hand there, and he puts the pitcher closer to the barrel, and then the flow hits the wall, that's called negiyah ayedevi davar acher. That's coming into contact with something else, with a, you're basically touching the wine through a medium. Now over here, it's bikavana. You have intent. He's doing this intentionally to touch it. And then that's what the problem is over here, which is that he is now bringing the wall of the pitcher towards the flow of the wine with his hand there. And that's negiyah ayedei davar acher. So the Ramban offers that as also an alternative as to what the problem is when the goy moves the pitcher in this instance. Bali HaTosafot over here brings something that has major implications to Halacha. It's also found in the Bali HaTosafot later on Ayin Bet, Amud Bet. He brings almost an identical, the Tosafot there is almost identical to what is here, although he does add in a line over there, which indicates where he favors or how he favors the terms of the position. He says, when a Jew is pouring wine from one utensil to another, the other Jew, the non-Jew, should not be helping him in this process. Unless there's another Jew who is helping significantly whatever the Ovei Kochavim is doing. If the barrel or the utensil is on the back of a wagon and it is pouring out to be filled into a pitcher, and so then the goy, he lifts up the wagon in order that it will pour faster, so that the wine will come out faster. Just imagine an urn that you have hot water on Shabbat and you turn on the tap. So the water flows out. If you tilt it, the water will come out of the tap sometimes faster because the pressure of the water that's there. So similar over here, they have this sitting on the back of a wagon. There's a hole in it or there's a tap in it, and the wine is coming out of that tap and going into a pitcher. All he does is lifts up the agalah to increase the flow from that barrel. Zeaya masa, there was an incident like this. The Reb didn't want to say it's a sur, he didn't want to say it was mutar. Omikomakom, and this is the line that's added in Ayin Bet Amud Bet, that's not found in our Tosfot. Nire, the kevin de blavachi name yain mikaleach. Since over here the wine would have flowed without the help of the goy, and all he did was add that it flows faster. Imkein mutar, there it's totally mutar. It is the equivalent of helping where there is no real help there, which is that it would have happened anyway. He just accelerated it. When you accelerate something, that's not called a masse, where you are taking significant action to change the dynamic of what is happening. The dynamic is, it's flowing. All you're doing is increasing the flow. That is not a problem. In our Tosafot, he suggests that maybe that's a possibility, and then brings the read that the read waffled on the issue. Over there, he brings that the read waffled, and then he says definitively that we're not going to worry about it. And that's what the Bali Tosafot say over here. If he's just increasing flow, that is not a problem, because it would have come out anyway without the help of the goy. Aval. But you have to be careful of the case where you have this on Shabbat as well. We have the urn that the water has dropped below the level of the tap. And in dropping below the level of the tap, the water won't come out. You tilt the urn so the water will reach the level of the tap and come out. So if you do the similar thing with wine, so then he lifts up the barrel or tips the barrel to allow the wine to exit now, which wouldn't have happened otherwise, then it is problematic. And it is problematic even if you have a young Jewish child helping him out. And that is because the Jewish child is considered to be siyua shein bo mamash. If you have two people working, you have a child who's carrying it and an adult who's carrying it, usually the child who's carrying it is actually not really helping or not making a big difference. Sometimes even making it more difficult. So in that case, the goy is considered to be doing the whole thing. So adding in the young child to help out is not going to change that dynamic. And therefore, you need to have an adult that's there along with the goy in order to make sure that it's two people that are doing it. And then again, we discussed over here in the previous Tosafot that when you have two people doing it, then it is mutar, but the chatkila, we don't want you to do that because of the risk that the Jew might fall away or the Jew might let go for a second, and that would leave all the weight being borne by the goy. So here you have an important balei Tosafot about when a goy is involved with the wine. Is he affected based on this problem here of kocho or tzude tzade, that he's moving the pitcher, taking some action with the pitcher? That's only true when he changes the dynamic, which wouldn't have otherwise happened. It's pouring anyway, and he just increases the flow, we don't worry about it. But if there would be no flow without him, and then he tilts it to create the flow, that's a problem. And also, if he's holding the pitcher and catching the wine, you have to be careful that he's not doing that alone because of the problem here. But mitzadei tzude, if he moves it, shakes it, or does something with it, then you have a problem over here. And that's why you either need another Jew together with him, or you have to ensure that the goy isn't in that process. So now, Amar Papa, Hayoved Kochavim, the Dari Zika, he is carrying a leather flask or canteen of wine, Bekaza Yisrael Achorei. So, and there's a Jew walking behind him, which is literally that you have a Yisrael Agabo, you have a Jew on his back, that is a type of Shmirah that we speak about, where there's a Jew watching the process or ensuring that the process is fine. So over here, you have a Jew walking behind him who can look at the canteen or see the flask that is on his back. So he knows he's not opening it up. He knows that he's not touching the wine directly. But then you have a problem, which is Rav Papa suggests over here, Malya Shari. If the flask or canteen is full to the top, it's mutar. Delo mikarkesh. Because the wine can't move around. There's no room for the wine to move within the flask, because the flask is completely full. Kasera, if there is airspace in there, and there's room for the wine to move around, asir, then it's problematic. Tilma mikarkish, because we're worried about him shaking it, or moving it, so that the wine shakes, and we just said before, that going to Rashi, mikarkish, could be a problem, where you intend to move the utensil, and have the wine move around. That is problematic, because that would be considered to be like shichshuch, a way to create this nisuch hayayin by touching the walls of the item and moving the wine around. Kuba, if you have a pitcher, malya asir, if it's filled to the top, it is problematic, because as Rashi noted before, when it's filled to the top, we're worried about the possibility that he's going to come into contact with it, that he's going to touch it. Dilmanogo, maybe he will touch it. Chaseira shari, if it's missing some, it's not filled to the top, and there is room in there, shari, that is mutar, the low nogo, because he's not coming into contact with it, he's not touching the wine. In the case of the pitcher that's full, we're worried about him coming into contact with the wine. Either it'll flow over, he'll touch it, he can put his hand in there, he can reach it easily without doing very much. On the other hand, if it is a pitcher that is somewhat full, it's not totally full, then we don't worry about it because he won't be mikarkesh. Wait a minute. Just before, Rashi mentioned that mitzadei tzude is one of the two explanations Rashi gave was that if it's not full, that he's shaking it around. And over there, you said that that'd be a problem. And asur b'shtiyah. Why all of a sudden over here do you say, oh, if it's empty, we don't worry about mikarkesh? So the difference is, it's very nuanced, but you can see it in Rashi. When it's empty, Rashi says over here, kaven delo nechalei bikarkushei. He's not interested in the utensil moving, dilma mishtapich, because maybe it will spill. Therefore, whatever happens here is unintentional and mutar. So when he is carrying this pitcher that is not full, then any movement of the wine is detrimental to whatever activity he's engaging in. He's trying to move this pitcher. And if the wine starts to move around, it's going to spill over or splash out of the pitcher. So he doesn't want that to happen. And any movement that happens is unintentional movement. As opposed to the case before, Rashi specifically said, no pun intended, but intentionally said, Afilu chaser nami came into mikarkesh bikavana, that he intentionally shakes it. So there's a difference between movement of the wine, where he does it intentionally, there could be a problem of mikarkesh o mishachsech. But in the case where it happens unintentionally, then it's not considered to be a problem, because in that case, it's actually detrimental to him. It's something that he doesn't want to happen, because if it's open at the top and it's moving around the wine, there's a good chance that wine's going to spill out and cause a problem for him. And so that's the distinction that's being made here, according to Rav Papa. Rav Papa believes that when you have a flask or a canteen, if it's full, it's not a problem. If it's partially full, then it's problematic. And just the opposite when it comes to a kuba. A kuba that is completely full is problematic because of the negiah. If it's partially full, then it is not problematic because the karikushe is not what he, is not something that is beneficial to him, and therefore he doesn't want it to happen. Rav Ashi argues on Rav Papa and says, Zika ben Malyo ben Chaseira Shari. A canteen or flask that is full or partially full is mutar. My taima. Ein derech nisuch bekach. That's not the normal way to do nisuch hayayin. People don't do nisuch hayayin in a closed flask or a closed canteen. They only do it when they can actually either come into contact with it or spill some of it out, move it around. But when it's a sealed canteen or flask, nobody does nisuch hayayin in that way. And as the Bali Tosafot will point out, Rav Ashi is a batra. And since he is a batra, the halacha is going to be like Rav Ashi. And that means that when you're dealing with a flask or a canteen or a sealed item, the movement in the wine in there is not problematic. Because it's contained and it's sealed, that's not considered to be mikarkesh. That's not considered to be a problem of nisuch hayayin. On the other hand, if it's an open utensil, there we worry about if it's full, the possibility that he came into contact with it. If it's partially empty and it would be detrimental to him if it moved around and he wouldn't do it intentionally, move it around, then again, it's not a problem, but he agrees with Rav Papa with regards to the fact that if it's full, that there is a problem of negiah. Now you can see that in the Bali Tosafot. Bali Tosafot say, V'hachi kaim along to the Rav Ashi, who batra, v'kuba lo polik. But with the pitcher, he doesn't argue v'asur. V'gdavka kishenosal rosho o al-ktefo. All of this is true when he's transporting it on his head, or he's transporting it on his shoulder. Dika lemechash dilmanoga. In that case, he could easily touch it. When he's transporting it, he's directly in contact with the utensil. He has it on his shoulder, he has it on his head. And therefore, he could touch it if it was full. Aval bimot olisadli derech tabato. If he has it on a staff, like a Johnny Appleseed type of staff that's holding the bucket way out there, oh, he's carrying the bucket by its ring. There, mutar. Over there, there's no problem at all, because he's not in direct contact with the utensil. So only when he's in direct contact with the utensil is it problematic, because then he could touch the wine when it is full. Again, in all of these cases, where it's partially full, it's not a problem, because he's transporting it. If it moves around, it would all be detrimental. It'll spill on him, on his head, on his shoulder, or spill out on the back, and that's definitely not what he wants to happen, and therefore it's mikarkesh. If it moves, it's unintentional movement, it's not a problem. Umikan hitir Rabbeinu Tam. Based on our Gemara over here, the Rabbeinu Tam was matir al barza shaita rufuya bechavit. There was a tap or a piping that was loose inside the barrel. Val stimata migufa shaita rufuya, or the seal on the top of the barrel was weak or not strong. Al piachavit bao vechuchavim veidik. And all vechuchavim came and strengthened it. Either set the tap in properly, he tightened it, or he fixed the seal on top. All of these issues, the Rabbeinu Tam said, are not problematic, because in each of these cases, the goy, he might be moving the wine, but he's not in contact with the wine. And since it's sealed, it may not be the best seal, may not be the best tap right now, but it's still sealed. And when he fixes it and locks it in place, he is working on the barrel in a way that it remains sealed, it remains closed, and therefore his contact with it is not a problem for the wine that is inside. Similar to what we're saying over here, that only when it's full and he can come into contact with the wine is there a problem. But if it's sealed like a canteen, then there's no issue of karkush, and even if he is interacting with it, we won't consider that to be problematic at all. And the reason he's matir, again, in all these cases, is she'em edamek leo masim lenod shel orach, she'en derech nisuch bekach. This isn't the normal way that people do nisuch, and therefore, it's not a problem. And it speaks about even when you take a canteen and you press the walls together, or you move the skins around, that's not considered to be a problem. And similarly over here, when you move or go to seal it or tip it over or put the berets in it, tighten the berets in it, none of those are problematic. All right, the next case is Ma'atzra Zairo. He's inside of a press. That press, if it's worked by an Ovei Kochavim, Rav Papi Shari, Papi says it's not a problem. Rav Ashi, Rav Shimi Ba'ashi, whether it's Rav Ashi or his son, Rav Shimi, Asar, he thinks it's problematic. And Rashi claims that the type of press that we're speaking about over here is a Gat De'in Dorchin. It's a press, not where they stomp on the grapes and they step on them to crush them. Elokobshim Bikora. They press them down with a heavy beam. So Rashi says the Zaira is a machbesh. It's like a press of some sort, but a press that involves some piece of wood or a korah, something heavy that is put on top of the grapes. The Rabbeinu Tam notes that he doesn't think that they're pressing actually grapes in this, because that type of press where they use the heavy board and they lower it down was only by olives and not by grapes. But they used to use it for the grape seeds. And so that's the situation that's being spoken about here. The Ravid, on the other hand, says that the case is a case where they put the boards on top of the grapes, and then they walk on those boards to press them down. So that's the press that we're speaking about here. So it's a press where you're not in direct contact with the grapes, but you are using force of some sort to press the grapes. So now, the Gemara gives two possibilities of how to view this. Bikocho, if it's his direct force, Kuliyama lo pligi dasir. Everybody agrees that it's problematic. Ki pligi, their machloket is, bikoach kocho. When it's a derivative force of his, secondary force of his, then it is a machloket. Ikadamri, some say bikoach kocho, kuliyama lo pligi, that when it comes to secondary force or a derivative force, everybody agrees that it is shari, mutar. Ki pligi, where they argue is bikocho, when he's putting direct force on these items. Hava ubda bikoach kocho. There was an incident where he was using secondary force. Ba'asar Rav Yaakov Minar Pokud. And Rav Yaakov Minar Pokud said that that is asur. That is obviously following the first lashon that says that by kocho, everybody agrees it's problematic. Bikoach kocho, there's a machloket. And he's passing like the one who is usir by koach kocho. So now, based on the explanations we saw before for Rashi, kocho is a case where you put the beam down, this heavy press you put down on the grapes, that's called kocho. Koach kocho, according to Rashi, is a case, as he describes over here, where you have migalgel, hagalgal. You have a screw that you turn, and then that screw puts pressure on the board, the korah, and presses it down on the grapes, or the other way around. The screw loosens the board and allows it to descend on the grapes. Either way, that's called koach kocho, because his force is being placed on the screw, and he's working the screw. The screw then exerts force on the board or releases the board to go down, and that puts pressure on the grapes. That's called koach kocho, according to Rashi. According to the Ravid, who said that it's putting heavy boards on top, and then you walk on the boards, walking on the boards is considered to be kocho. Koach kocho is a case where you take heavy rock, or you take something heavy and you roll it on top of those boards. So you're not putting the pressure on the boards directly. You're taking another item that has force to it, and then using that to exert force on the boards that are on top of the item. So that's koach kocho. And again, based on what the conclusion of the Gemara is, it wouldn't matter. Kocho would be asur, and koach kocho would be asur based on the psak of Rav Yaakov Minar Pakud. And that you see in the last Tosafot, he says, V'chein pasak Rabbeinu Chananel demasirah. The Rabbeinu Chananel paskin, that's the halacha, that koach kocho would be considered to be asur. And therefore, the Balikos would say, V'chein tov, hadavar shtisai Yisrael lemalui kochavim, the galgel. That if they're moving the screw in order to allow the korah to descend or press the korah down, the Jew should do it along with the goy. If the goy does it alone, then it would be koach kocho of the goy, and that would be problematic. So Tosafot suggests that over here the Jew needs to be a partner or part of the process to put it down, so that at least you could be makil in that case. Because then you have two things going in your favor. First of all, you have a Jew and an Ovei Kochavim working together, and you have koach kocho. Two of those things together will allow it to be mutar. Now, he says, if Yisrael could have done it alone, and then the goy joins him, it's not a problem. Or if neither of them could have done it alone, but together they could do it, then that's fine. That goes to the lachot of Shabbat, called Shnayim Shasu. Two people who join in a melacha together. The Gemara in Shabbat tells us that each one of them could not do it independently, and they do it jointly. That's a classic case of Shnayim Shasu, which is a specific Xerat HaKatuv by Shabbat that you may be patur. But over here, that would mean that each one is contributing to the action. And then that way, the Jew is also contributing, and it's not the Goy himself. Or if the Jew could do it himself, and the Goy helps him, it doesn't matter, because since the Jew could have done it himself, in the Gemara and Shabbat, that's not called Shnayim Shasu. That's you did it, and someone else happened to help you, but their help is irrelevant, because you could have done it alone. The problem arises if the Ovi Kuchavim could have done it himself, and the Jew could not have done it himself. Then there might be a problem, because then the Jew's help really is not help, because the Jew couldn't have done it by himself, the Goy could have done it by himself, and he says over there, it might be a problem to be Oser. Then he writes, Amnam Arashvam Perish, Shim Gilgal Avi Kuchavim Levado, B'yeshkan Hefsid Meruba, if the Goy did it himself, he turned the screw himself, and there would be a huge loss from this, Yeshli Smok Al Ikadamre, you could be Somech on the Ikadamre here, Shematir B'Koach Kochol, it allows Koach Kochol to be Mutar, where he says that everybody agrees Koach Kochol is Mutar, and so there is room to be matir, or to at least say that if there's a hefset merubah, we could paskin like the other day I hear that koach kocho is mutar. But then the Bali Tosafot note that our precedents actually involve multiple stages that are removed from the actual pressing. Rashi's situation is that you have a board and a screw, and you're using the screw to tighten the board down. That's koach kocho. But imagine, for instance, that you had a pulley system in place. And then there was a mechanism by which you had to release the wheel. Then the wheel you turned to move the pulley system. And then the pulley system lowered the board onto the grapes. You all of a sudden have multiple derivatives in terms of koko. And that's what the Bali Tosafot point out. That our presses, Hanimatsi Diani, Ika Gimel Kochot, there are three derivatives, or three stages removed in terms of the koch. Makel, the stick, the galgal, the screw, vikora, and then the board. So the screw has some sort of stick or mechanism who gears that moves it, and then the screw itself, and then the board. And he says, v'od koach revi, kishimisimim tapim ala navim. And then if you put on top of that, you put boards on top of the grapes, and then the beam comes down on those boards, you add in a fourth koach. Umiyo, the mandasar lo matzinu chiluk ben gimel kochot lebet. Over here, Tosafot makes a statement, and Rashi also is quoted in the name of the Rashbam as saying the same thing, that it doesn't matter. There's no difference between koach kochot and three kochot and four kochot. It's all the same at that point. We don't make such a distinction. The Gemara only recognizes one differential, that is kochot versus koach kochot. After koach kochot, it's all considered to be koach kochot, and it's all one category. But the Bali Tosafot are, you can see, thinking that maybe there is a different category, which is koach kochot might be problematic. But if you got to a third level, maybe over there it would be okay, even according to one of the sisters that serve with koach kochot. Tosafot himself and Rashi don't accept that, but there are Rishonim that believe that koach kochot is problematic, but koach kochot would be fine because you're already three stages removed, and that is not what the Gemara was speaking about. It's similar to a machloket that is found by the Din in Shabbat of Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, whether there's such a concept as Kli Shlishi. The Gemara only recognizes Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni, never recognizes Kli Shlishi. But there are those that want to be Matir, to for instance, by Kalei Abishul, like tea and things like that, that you make it into a Kli Shlishi, that would also be fine, even though a Kli Sheni would be problematic. So those poskim want to say that Kli Shlishi is fine, is because the Gemara only said Kli Sheni, means that Kli Shlishi is fine. Others say the Gemara only recognizes two categories, Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni. There was never ever a Kli Shlishi mentioned in the Gemara. How can you be matir something that they Kli Shlishi if the Gemara doesn't recognize it? There's only Kli Rishon. Kli Sheni means anything after Kli Rishon, including Kli Shlishi, and they all have the same din. That similar concept by Shabbat is also Tosafot supplying over here, which is, here he says there should be no distinction between Sheni, Shlishi, and Revi, but there are poskim or Rishonim that want to suggest that there is such a distinction, similar to the machloket that we have by the case of Shabbat of Kli Sheni and Kli Shlishi. Right now, the Gemara continues. You had this barrel that split vertically. This Obekohavim jumped up, and he squeezed it. He basically hugged the barrel. He hugged it to close it in, to not allow it to flow out. Had he left it, the two sides would have fallen away from each other, and the wine would have spilled away. So what he does is he grabs it, hugs it, to hold it in place, to hold the wine until they can bring another utensil, and then they'll empty it out into this new utensil. And in this case, Sharya, Rafram Bar Papa, Vitem Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua. So Rafram Bar Papa, Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua, were Matir Lizvune the Obde Kochavim. They allow you to sell it to a non-Jew. That means that it is Asur Bishtia, but Mutar Behana'a. Vahane Mile the Pakal Orka. That's only true if the split happened vertically. Aval the Puchia, if the split was horizontal, Afilu Bishtia Shari. To drink it even would be mutar, my kaimo. What's the difference? What's the issue over here? Masa leveina ko'ovid. All he's doing is replacing a brick. He's replacing weight that needed to be exerted over here, and therefore it's not considered as if he touched it. So now, there are different ways to formulate this. We'll look at Rashi first. Rashi the Shitato says over here, the difference between Isur Shtiyah and Isur Hana'ah is a difference between Nigiyah. Touching it makes it a surbishtia, shikshuk, the possibility of moving your fingers or doing something that would be similar to nisachayin makes it a sur behana'a. So over here, he can't come into direct contact with the wine because he's hugging the utensil itself. So when he's hugging the utensil itself, he's touching the wine through the walls of the barrel. And so that's what Rashi says. Rashi says you have a negiyah over here. You're actually in contact with the wine. Ayudei davar acher. It's through another mechanism, but you are touching the wine indirectly by hugging it. That's negiyah. Negiyah makes it a sur b'shtiyah. Shikshuch is not relevant here because he can't come into direct contact with the wine because the barrel is sealed by his hugging it. Therefore, it's going to be a sur b'shtiyah, but mutar behana because his hugging it through the walls of the chavit, make it into nogeya. On the other hand, if it is cut horizontally, over there, the barrel or the utensil would have stayed together. The only reason it would allow wine to seep out, or the wine to leach, is if there's not enough pressure on the top to keep it sealed down on the bottom. So in that case, you could put a heavy brick on top, and the wine would have remained inside. So now when he comes and does the similar action, which is not that he's hugging it, but he's just putting pressure on the top, it's not considered as if he is touching the wine. Because his action is not what is holding it together. It's simply that he's replacing a weight. So the Rashi notes, since the upper half still sits on the lower half, it would leach out. All he's doing is putting a little pressure there. That's not considered to be touching the wine. It's not considered as if he's touching the wine. So Rashi differentiates between an action that causes the wine to be preserved. That's called touching the wine. And that way you're actually holding the wine. Versus a case where the action just stops the wine from leaching, but you're not actually holding the wine in place because the wine would have stayed in place otherwise. May have leached out a little bit. All he's doing is increasing the pressure to keep it in place the way it is. So that's not considered as if he's touching the wine. The Tosafot Reed says something similar, but in a more dramatic way, which is that when you hug it from the sides, then the wine would not have been able to stay without your hugging it, and therefore you are ma'amid. You're holding up the wine. You're actually causing the wine to be there. On the other hand, when it's cut horizontally, over there, you're not holding up the wine. The wine would have stayed even without you there. It might have leached out. It might have leaked a little bit. But the wine itself is preserved in its current state. You're just increasing the pressure to stop it from leaking. And in that case, you're not really holding up the wine. So in the case where you're holding up the wine, it's problematic. Where you're not, it's not problematic. The way Rashi formulates it is that when you are nogea bayayin ayudei davar acher, if you're touching the wine through another utensil, then it is problematic. If you are not touching it through a utensil because the wine would have stayed in and you're just keeping pressure on the barrel, you're not actually touching the wine because You're not doing anything that would lift the wine or move the wine. You're just putting pressure on the barrel. That's not considered to be nogeya. And for that reason, in the latter case, it would be mutar b'shtia. And in the former case, it would be asur b'shtia, but mutar b'hana'a. What you see from all of this, developed over time, is that nisuch ha'yayin in its origins was a wine libation, the pouring of wine in front of the avodah zarah. What seems to have developed, and what Chazal are indicating, is that practice was then expanded to be something that they did even out of context, and they did it even in a small way. For instance, they went to drink some wine, or they had a pitcher of wine that they were using. They would dedicate some of that wine to their avodah zarah, but even the absence of the avodah zarah, they would just take a little bit off and spill it out, or a little bit and shake their finger and say, that's dedicated to the avodah zarah. What you see is that there's a change in the way that they are interacting. Now, I'm sure the Gemara is influenced by what's happening in the time of the Romans and the idol worship or what goes on in that time. And that the practices developed to the point where they weren't only just pouring wine in front of the avodah zarah, but even when they went to meals or did things like that, they would take a little bit of the wine, spill it out, or dedicate it to their avodah zarah, and that was considered for them to be a practice of nisuch ha'yayin. And Chazal are trying to say, well, we got to protect against that happening, because that's going to make it into yayin nesech, and we have a problem. So therefore, if he comes into contact, he's nogeya, or he's mishach sheikh, or has the possibility of being mishach sheikh, that wine is going to be off limits for that reason. So even though this is not your classic type of nisuch ha'yayin, whenever there is a possibility of you doing something that is considered to be nigia, coming into contact with the wine, that we're going to deem as being problematic, even though in some of these cases, the nigia never involves him actually touching the wine. It's a nigia yadei davar acher. He's contacting the wine through a different action. Once Chazal said the nigia is a sur, then you have to figure out what's called nigia. Nigia may not just be a case where you actually touch the physical wine. It may be even when you're nogeya yadei davar acher. That's considered to be nigia. But that's all a development or a derivative of the fact that they already think that if you can come into contact with the wine, the person might do something that is equivalent to or similar to nisuch ha'yayin. So now the Baal Yom Tosafot over here spends some time on different scenarios, including their wooden barrels, which will come up later in the Masechta a lot also, which is that in the time of the Gemara, they were using earthenware utensils to store the wine. Whereas in the time of the Rishonim, time of the Baal Yom Tosafot, they're already using wooden barrels to store the wine. And therefore they're coming into different issues, which is that the wooden barrels leach. Because sometimes the pressure is not enough, or there's gapping between the boards, or gapping between the boards and the top or bottom of those barrels. And the Baal Yom Tosafot want to know, if you stuff filler or wood shavings in there to seal it up, is that a problem of coming into contact with the wine? Or is that a problem that the Ovid Kochavim is now nogeya? It's really our case over here. If he's hugging the barrel to stop it from leaking, it's problematic. If he's just putting pressure on it, it's not a problem. So how do you view these types of leaks that are coming out or seepages that are coming out of their barrels when the Ovid Kochavim comes along in order to seal it up or help you to seal it up? And here you can see the Baal Yom Tosafot bringing different scenarios in which some people want to be oser, and then he brings from the Rishbam and the Ri, that they are much more makil with these items, saying that the goy is not really coming into contact with the wine. So for instance, the Rashbam speaks about a case where it's dripping out of the bottom of the barrel. If it's just dripping slowly, it's not a problem for the goy to be the one who seals it. If it's dripping or flowing on a regular basis, then there's a problem for the goy doing it, because when he seals it up, he's also going to come into contact with the wine, because you have a flow of wine that is seeping out. And the Ri speaks about different scenarios about sealing in the top or bottom of the barrel, whereby there's a groove in the boards, and then by the pressure that's put in there, the top or bottom sits in that groove, and that's what locks the barrel in place, or seals the barrel in place. If there's leakage over there, and you put nesoret, sawdust, or something in there to stop it from leaking, is that okay? But again, they think that it's similar to our case over here, whereby he's not in direct contact with the wine, and he's putting in something that would otherwise have been sealed, he's just sealing it better. So maybe in those cases, it shouldn't be a problem. And same with cracks and other things that allow for the seepage of wine, all of those will be considered to be fine because the goy is helping out, but not coming into contact with the wine, or not considered to be nogeya with the wine. And now the next case. We found this goy who was hanging out in the press. Nobody was there, no Jew was there, and the goy was hanging out in the press. Question is, what's the status of the press? So Amar Rav Ashi, I ika tofeach latfiach by yadocha ubay niguf. If it is moist enough, this is a terminology that is really used in a number of places in Shas, including you're most familiar probably with it with regards to Yom Kippur. Then on Yom Kippur, you're not allowed to, for instance, wash yourself on Yom Kippur. So there, what happens if you have some liquid on your fingers? Are you allowed to wipe out your eyes or wash out your eyes? So the din is that if it is mashke tofeach, if it is wetness or moisture, that if you take it from your finger and put it in your eye, that would be the end of the moisture. It would be absorbed in there, or that would be the end of it, and it couldn't wet anything else. That would be mutar on Yom Kippur. Whereas if it's tofeach or menat tafeach, there's enough moisture, enough water on your finger that if you put it in your eye, and then you touch something else to your eye, or put another finger in your eye, it would wet that finger. That is problematic. That's tofeach. Amanat latfiach, or tofeach latfiach, which is that it's so moist that when it touches another object, that object could wet something else or moisten something else. So if the gat still has liquid in it, that is enough liquid that it would moisten something and that something would moisten something else, then you need hadacha, you need to rinse it out, and niguv, you have to do the process of niguv, which will be discussed later on in the Masechta, how you kasher a gat. And over here, Rashi notes, it means efer o maima efer. You have to put in ashes or something that's really abrasive and dry. Then you have to wash it out and then put in something dry again. That's the process of niguv. Vilo, if it's not wet enough, whereby if you touched it, you could wet something else. Simply it would make you moist, but not something else moist. Then b'hadacha ba'al masagile. It's enough to rinse it out, simply rinse out the gat, and then you could use it afterwards. So this is a question, again, that will come up much more extensively later on in the Masechta about when is the gat problematic, which type of wine to make it problematic, and then how do you kasher it. Here, the Tosafot makes two notes. The first one is, b'chinam yiskir hadacha. He says that rinsing it out, in the case where it says that it's tofeach almanat lat piach, or tofeach lat piach, in that case, it mentions that you do hadacha, you rinse it out, and you do niguv. So it says that mentioning hadacha is meaningless because the whole niguv are actually tein mayim tchila. The only way you can do niguv, which is the drying out and the abrasive type of kashering of the gat, requires a rinsing first. So by definition, niguv includes hadacha in it. So you don't have to say you have to do hadacha and niguv. Niguv by itself includes hadacha. So the only reason the Gemara mentions hadacha and niguv is because of the second case, where all you need is hadacha and not niguv, so mention hadacha in both cases. But the truth is, in the first case, you don't need hadacha. Then the Rashbam asks a more fundamental question, which is, the liquid that is in the gat, is it considered to be wine, or is it not considered to be wine? So here, the Gemara is telling you that if it is moist enough, that if it touches something, that could make something else moist, that's considered to be wine, and you have to do niguv. But in the case where it's just moist, and therefore if it touched something, it would make it moist, but that could not be passed on to another item, in that case, you only need hadacha. The Rashbam says, mimonav shach, I don't understand. If it is wine, and it's classified to be wine, then it should require niguv. If that's not classified as wine, then what do you need hadacha for at all? So what's the point? Either it is or isn't wine. If it isn't wine, you need nothing. If it is wine, you have to do the full processing, which is niguv. So what's this idea of doing hadacha, which is like this half-hearted cleaning out of the gat? The Rashbam suggests that you have two problems in a gat. You have a problem of the wine or the moisture that's on the surface, and you also have a problem of the wine that is absorbed into the walls of the gat. In order for it to be problematic, we have to look at what has gone on here. So what he suggests is that when it is just moist enough, that if you touched it, it would make something moist, the wine on the surface is a problem, but the wine that is absorbed into the walls is not problematic. On the other hand, if it is moist enough that if you touched it, you would make you moist, and then you could make something else moist, that also then makes it in contact or has connection to the balua, the wine that is balua. And therefore, if you have wine that is just tofeach, mashke tofeach, then you just rinse it out, because the wine on the surface is problematic. It is considered to be wine, and it's surface problem, and you can deal with it with a surface solution, which is rinse it out. On the other hand, if it is moist enough that it can moisten something else, and that can moisten another item, then that liquid on the surface connects it to the wine that is balua, that's absorbed in the walls. And then you need a full kashrut. Then you need hadacha and niguv, because the niguv deals not only with the wine on the surface, it deals with the wine in the walls of the gut. And that's why, in this case, even though it's classified as wine, it would be enough to rinse it out, because that wine alone is the problem, not the wine that is absorbed into the walls. Although the Ravid suggests that the distinction is the amount of processing that you need to remove it. If there's very little moisture, then hadacha will be sufficient to remove it. If there is significant moisture, then you need a stronger cleansing process to remove it. It won't be enough that you just clean it surfacely. You need actually to have a cleaning process that actually gets beneath the surface, because that extra moisture means that there's also more that was absorbed into the gut itself. And now the next Mishnah. Ovei kochavim, shenimtza omeid b'tzad habor. You find the ovei kochavim standing by the bor, which is the bor shel yayin, the capture mechanism for the wine that's been pressed. Im yesh lo milve alav, if he is a creditor to this Jew who has the wine in there, asur, then the wine is problematic. Ein lo milve alav, if he's not a creditor, mutar, then it's totally fine. As Rashi notes over here, if he is a creditor, then he's not afraid to touch it. If he's a creditor and he touches it and they say, what are you doing touching it? He'll say, listen, you owe me money and I'm thinking that this is going to be mine. And even if the guy gets upset that he's stealing it, he'll just say to him in the end, I'll take the wine and then you'll be off your debts. But he has reason to be there and he has a way to trade for whatever item he touched. Then if he's not a creditor, then he's less likely to make contact with the wine, because of the fact that if he's caught like that, people will think he's a ganav. He's stealing the wine that's there. He has no reason to be there. He has no reason to touch the wine. If he's touching it, then people will claim that he's a ganav. They will say that he stole it. They're going to make him pay for it. There's more problems because he doesn't have any claim over here. When he's a creditor, he has a claim, then he's not afraid to touch it. So that's what Rashi says is the way the Mishnah is explaining it. If he has a creditor, then we worry about him touching it and making it into stam yainam, or yayin nesech. Whereas if he's not a creditor, we don't worry about him touching it, even if he's present or standing near the boar. Nafal boar, if a goy fell into the boar, he fell into the collection vat, ve'ala, and he came out, madado bikaneh, he measured it with a stick, he teased it at sira bikaneh, it was a bee or a wasp coming, and he took a stick to hit out that bee or the wasp that was sitting in the wine. So he's touching the wine, but he's doing it through a staff. Oshia matpiach al piachavit mirutachat. Or when the original wine comes out, it's toseis. It starts to bubble from the process of fermentation. So that froth that comes up on top, he was moving away the froth. He was taking off the froth from the top or pushing it away, either so it didn't overflow, or so that it just cleared away the froth. B'chol elu haya maaseh, all of these were incidents that happened. Ve'amru yimacher, and they say that it is asur b'shtiyah, but not asur b'anah, that you can sell it. Rabbi Shimon matir, and Rabbi Shimon is matir legamrei, even b'shtiyah. We don't worry about the nigiyah in any of these cases. And so as Rashi notes over here, that all of these issues are hoil mishlok bekavana habe. They were unintentional. When he fell into the boar, he didn't go there intentionally. He wasn't going to take a swim. He fell in by accident. It was shlok bekavana. When he is measuring the wine, he is, yes, intentionally touching the wine, but as Rashi says, the davar acher nitkavein. His intent is different. He's not trying to touch the wine through the measuring stick, but he's rather doing it to measure the wine. And Rashi says that ha negiyah lav mamashi. That's not called a real negiyah. All these issues in the Mishnah are not considered to be a negiyah because of the fact they're unintentional or they're done through a different medium, but that medium also is not focused on touching the wine. When he puts the measuring stick in there, he's not trying to touch the wine, he's trying to measure the wine. So yes, he's in contact with it, ayidei davar acher, but it's unintentional contact. Back on Zayin Amud Aleph, Tosafot discussed this issue, because here you seem to have an indication that what's called negiyah ayidei davar acher, when you have contact that is done by yidei davar acher, by another item, that other item then, shelo bikavana, if it's unintentional, then it's not a problem. And the Tosafot wants to differentiate between direct contact with the wine an indirect contact with the wine. If you're in direct contact with the wine, shelo bekavana, unintentionally, over there, then it's asur bit shtia mutar bahana. And the Baal HaTosfot suggests that if you have contact ayidei davar acher, if it's done with another medium in between, then if it's shelo bekavana, if it's unintentional, it's not only is it mutar bahana, it's even mutar bishtia. And so he argues on Rashi. Rashi over here makes it clear, and so does Rashi back by the case of the lulav, that negia yedei davar acher, when you touch something through another mechanism, shelo bekavana, unintentionally, that is still problematic. It's a store bishtia mutar bahana'a. So tell us what it says. What are you talking about? What about our case over here by the medidat hakaneh? Over there, Rashi sees these two cases being equivalent, which is over here by the case of the lulav, he made unintentional contact with the wine through the lulav, and that's why it's mutar bana asur bishtia, similar to the case in the Mishnah where the kaneh is, Rashi claims, unintentional contact with the wine. Baal HaTosfot say, what do you mean unintentional contact with the wine? That's intentional contact with the wine. He wants to put the kaneh into the wine in order to measure it. Rashi calls that shelo bekavana because he's not intending to touch the wine, he's just intending to measure the wine. Baal HaTosfot say, what are you talking about? That is intentional contact with the wine. And therefore the Baal HaTosfot differentiate and say that if you come into unintentional contact with wine through another mechanism, that is mutar the gamre. How do they deal with the case of lulav over there? They say that the case of lulav is not a case where the lulav touched the wine, but he was coming down from the palm tree, and he himself touched the wine. He touched it by accident, shelo bekavana. It was unintentional direct contact, and that's why there, asur b'shtia, not bana. In our case, this is a case, ayidei davar acher. He's intending to touch the wine. He's putting the measuring stick in there intentionally, but it's ayidei davar acher. It's through a medium. And therefore, it's asur b'shtia mutar bana. But had he put in a stick unintentionally, it'd be mutar b'shtia as well. That's a big difference between Rashi and the Baal HaTosfot, which is when you come into contact with something ayidei davar acher, Rashi believes that it's still asur b'shtia mutar bahana'a, as long as it's unintentional. So in the case of the lulav, he unintentionally dipped the lulav into the wine. In our case, it's unintentional because he doesn't intend to touch the wine. He intends to just be measuring. Baal HaTosfot say, touching ayidei davar acher is asur b'shtia only bekavana to touch. Only when you're intending to touch the wine, like the measuring stick, where he's putting it into the wine and he intends to touch the wine. But by the case of lulav, fell up, they came down the tree, and if lulav touched the wine, be mutar the gamre. What was the problem by lulav? He came into direct contact with the wine. And direct contact with the wine, shlo bekavana, is mutar behana asur b'shtia. So that difference of the way that the Tosfot explained the Gemara back on Zayin Amud Aleph will influence how you read why the case of kaneh here, or why the cases here in the Mishnah are considered to be asur b'shtia mutar behana. For Rashi, it's because there's no negiyah over here. It's not that you're intending to touch the wine. It's all unintentional. Whereas for the Baal HaTosfot, it's because it's coming ayidei davar acher. Even though you're intending to touch the wine, you're doing it through a different medium or through something that is between you and the wine. And therefore, it's asur b'shtia, but mutar behana. Because had it been shelo bekavana, it would be mutar legamre. Natal et achavit, he took a barrel, v'zarka b'chamato labor, and he throws it in his anger into the vat that has captured the wine. Zeya masa, there was a case like this, v'yachshiro, and they were matir, meaning apishtiyah. They said it was totally mutar. Now the Gemara is going to deal with all of these cases that we just mentioned in the Mishnah. The first thing is, Amar Shmuel, b'yu sheyesh lo milveh al oto yayin. Then we say that we're worried about the goy touching the wine. That's only when, as Rashi says, he made it into an aputuki. He has a directed collateral through the wine that's there. He lent him money, and the collateral for that money or that loan was this wine. Then we worry about him touching it because it's his alternate form of collection. He feels like it's his. But if he stum has credit outstanding, he's not going to touch the wine. Amar Rav Ashi, matnina nami deiko. There's a diuk out of our Mishnah that suggests that that is true. That's not. Our Mishnah says, "Emetaher yeno shel obey kochavim." It's not the Mishnah that we just read. It's the Mishnah on the Samach Aleph Umin Aleph, which is the second half of this Mishnah. Over there it says, "A person who is metaher yeno shel obey kochavim." A Jew came to help out the goy. The goy wants to be able to sell his wine to Jews, but he knows if he presses it, if he works with it, the Jews aren't going to buy the wine. So he gets a Jew to come in and press the wine and do all the processing. So now it would be good to be sold to Jews. V'notno birshuto. And then he deposits it with the goy. V'hala kotev lo itkabalti mimcha ma'ot. And then the goy says, it says, if I already got paid from you, mutar. The wine is not problematic at all. Aval. The Jew wants to come and then take this wine. And the guy says, no, 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 not till you pay. Until you give me the money. It was an incident like this in Beit Shan, Basaro, and they made it a sur. The only reason here that it's problematic is because the guy won't release the item to the Jew without the payment. Had he released it to him, shari, it would have been mutar. Shmamina, milve oto yain beina shmamina. Over there is debt outstanding. Despite that fact, we don't say that the goy is problematic. So the scenario here is a case where the Jew pressed the wine on behalf of the goy to make it into kosher wine. Now they've sealed the wine up in the barrels and deposits them with the goy. The intent is to sell them to Jews in the future. The Jew hasn't paid any money for this. He's going to sell them to other Jews. And then he's going to pay the goy back for the wine. The question is, what is the status of those barrels in the interim? The Jew has a right over here to come and take them and sell them to a Jew, and the goy is not demanding payment for them up front. He says, once you sell them, you'll give me the money for it. So now it depends. The Mishnah indicates that it depends on how the goy interacts with the Jew. If the Jew comes along and takes those barrels out to sell to a Jew, and the goy says to him or writes to him, it's as if I got paid already, even though he hasn't been paid. There's an outstanding debt here. The Jew owes him money for these barrels, but the goy doesn't withhold or hold back on those barrels. The Jew takes them, sells them, and then brings him the money. Over there it's mutar, because the goy is not exerting any control over the barrels, and therefore, it's not a problem. On the other hand, if the goy says, you're not going to take a barrel out of here until you pay me for the money up front, then it's a problem because the goy is exerting control over those barrels. What you see from that is, only if the goy exerts control over the barrels is it problematic, because he sees them as his. If he sees them as his, he'll touch them, he'll do whatever he wants with them, then we have to worry about the wine in those barrels. And that's why then the Jew can no longer use that wine, because we assume that the goy, in his exertion of control, also has the capacity or the right, or feels that he's right, fully allowed to touch the wine there. And that'll cause a problem. On the other hand, if he does not hold the wine barrels as collateral, hold them back as collateral, but lets them take the barrels freely and pay him back afterwards, in that case, there's no problem. Because then he doesn't see them as his. Now, in that case, the Jew does owe him money. The goy is a creditor over this Jew. Yet we still say that the barrels are fine, and we don't worry about him touching it. That's a proof to Shmuel's position, as Rav Ashi notes, because when you have an outstanding debt in general, we don't worry about the barrels. It's only when it's directed collateral do we worry about it. So over here, in the case where the Jew has this open book to take them out, sell them, and then pay him back, even though he owes money to the guy, and even though he has to pay for these barrels that he's taking, nevertheless, even though there's debt outstanding, we don't say the guy is going to treat them like his or touch them as if they are his. And so that's a proof to Shmuel's position. Now, Rashi over here says, Im yesh mafteach o chutam biyad Yisrael. The truth is that it's only mutar if the Jew is holding a key or if the barrels are sealed. Meaning that there has to be some protection against the goy swapping out the barrels or just touching the barrels willy-nilly. The problem with Rashi's statement over here, and the Bach already notes it, is that Rashi on the Mishnah, tomorrow's daf, doesn't say that. Rashi says in the Mishnah tomorrow, mutar, demirta le'ovei kochavim. The goy is scared. Velo noga, and he won't touch it. Damar dima chazuli anach Yisrael. Maybe some Jew will notice me from the Rishut Rabim, and then if I come into contact, I'm going to lose all my money because the Jew's not going to buy it from me anymore, and it's not going to be good for Jewish consumption. Even if there is no key and there is no seal, then it is mutar. So what the Baal Tosafot point out is that the way Rashi explains the Mishnah, then it is a proof. Because over there you don't need a key and a seal, and despite the fact that you don't have a key and a seal, we say that when there's a loan outstanding, it's still mutar. And that would be a good proof to Shmuel's statement. On the other hand, Rashi over here, who says that you need a key and a seal on it, then why is this a proof at all to what Shmuel was saying over here? Because maybe the reason over here it's mutar is because he has a key and a seal on it. That's why it's mutar. Had he not had a key and a seal, it would have been asur. And then that would mean that the Mishnah is talking about even about a regular credit outstanding, not just directed collateral. So that's what says, Ishlomar, Svarata Talmud, Ke'echad b'shuto ve'kochavim, Ke'esh makteach chotam, Chashub yeneu shel Yisrael. When the Jew has a seal or a key, and it's in the possession of the Oved Kochavim, it's considered to be as if it is the Jew's, and the Oved Kochavim leaves it alone, and doesn't touch it. Ach b'lo mafteach chotam. Even without a key and a seal, Mikre Yeno Shel Yisrael, it's called the Jew's wine, came and shown no milveh ala yayin, because he has no directed credit against this wine. Afapish Yisrael chayav lo ma'ot, even though the Jew is chayav to him money, but since it's not a directed collateral over here, the goy feels like it's the Jew's wine. So what the Baal Tosafot is saying is that even though the reason it's mutar is because you have a mafteach and a chotam, nevertheless, the Oved Kochavim leaves it alone because he believes that it is the Jew's. Not just because there's a mafteach chotam, because he believes that it belongs to the Jew. And through that, they're extrapolating to our case here by the credit case, which is saying that as long as the goy believes it is the Jew's, he won't touch it. So in a case where there's a general loan outstanding to the Jew, then the goy won't touch it because he thinks of the wine as being the Jew's wine, even when it's not under lock and seal. The Agota Bach over here notes the Stira in Rashi and says, the way to explain it is let's tzadim tani, that it's actually two different scenarios. The scenario in the Mishnah that Rashi is saying you don't need a chotam and a mafteach for is a case when it is birshuta rabim, when it's open towards the public venue, therefore they would spot the goy going in there. If it's in a place where it's not open or visible to the rabim, then you need a mafteach and chotam, and that's how he solves the problem in the Stira and Rashi, between here and the Mishnah. But it is important to note that even though there's a mafteach and chotam here, nevertheless, the Gemara is still willing to extend that, as the Baal Tosafot would say, to a case where there is no mafteach and chotam, and say that as long as the goy views the wine as the Jew's wine, he's not going to take action, he's not going to touch it willy-nilly, because he'll be classified like a ganav. In the case where it's the wine of the Jews and the boar, then he's not going to touch it, because he's going to look like a thief if someone catches him doing that, and he believes that that is the Jew's wine, it just happens to be that the Jew owes him money, that's not enough a reason. But if it's directed collateral, he views the wine as his own, and in that case, he will have no reticence in touching that wine, and that's why it'll be a sur, like the Mishnah says. Nafal lebor v'ala. He falls into the vat, and then he comes out. Amar papa lo shana lo shala mate. It's only true if he comes up dead. Aval ala chai, if he comes up alive, a sur, the wine is problematic. My tama, why? Amar papa, the dami alek yome dam. It is like a day of celebration. For him, it's the equivalent of benching Gomel after surviving a difficult scenario. Similar over here. If he survives falling into the boar, then he's going to thank his God. And he does that by doing a little shikshuk or a little nisachayayin on his way out. But that means that he doesn't necessarily have to be dead when he's coming out. It just has to be a scenario where he doesn't have his wits about him. So that means if he's unconscious or if he's too afraid of drowning and he can't even think about doing shikshuk, then it's not going to be a problem. It's only if he comes out in a calm fashion where he could think about giving thanks to his God and doing some sort of nisachayayin, then that case would be problematic, because then we're afraid he actually did do some nisachayayin in order to thank God for saving him. Mother du bikane, measured by a stick, oelo ayu maseb amro yimacher Rabbi Shimon matir. Amra vader bava, yinucho lo Rabbi Shimon brachot arosho. Blessed be Rabbi Shimon, who is a definitive posek. Because Kishu Matir, when he says something is mutar, Matir afilu bishtia. He says it's not only mutar b'ana, it's also mutar bishtia. It's mutar the gamre. Kishu Oser, when he says something is asur, Oser afilu b'ana. He says that it's even asur b'ana. So Rabbi Shimon, when he gives a psak, it's either yes or no. It's black and white. Yes, it is problematic. That means it's problematic both to drink it and get hana from it. If he says it's not problematic, then it's mutar b'hana'a, mutar b'shti'a. As the Ramban explains over here, that Rabbi Shimon is actually making a distinction between the goy's wine and the Jew's wine. When it comes to the goy's wine, that's where they have the gzeirah mishum b'notehem. And there, because it's both a chashash mishum b'notehem and a chashash b'yayin nesef, the goy's wine is going to be not only a sur b'shti'a, it's also going to be a sur b'hana'a. But when it comes to a Jew's wine, There was never a gzeirah mishum benotehem. So if you can eliminate the problem of yayin nesech, then you're not going to have any itzur here whatsoever. And as the Rabbi Shimon says, in the cases of our Mishnah where there's no chashash of yayin nesech, and because it's the Jews' wine, there's no problem of benotehem, then there's no isur hana'a, but there's also no isur shtia. There are Rabbanan that argue on Rabbi Shimon, say that mishum benotehem is gzeirah that's equally applicable to the non-Jews' wine as it is to the Jews' wine. And the Jews' wine, if there's no problem of yayin nesech, still has a residual problem of mishum benotehem. And mishum benotehem makes it a sur b'shtia rachila, similar to pat and shemen, where they were gozer an isur achila, not an isur hana. So to balayayin, there's an isur shtia, not an isur hana. And therefore, in our Mishnah, where there's no chashash of yayin nesech, the isur hana falls away. But the isur shtia is still in place because of mishum benotehem. And so there's a fundamental machlog between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim, according to the Ramban, as to where you apply the gzera benotehem. According to Rabbi Shimon, it's only applicable to a goy's wine. According to the Chachamim, it even applies to a Jew's wine that's being touched by a goy, because that's also going to lead to socialization. And therefore, there's an Isher Shtia in our Mishnah in cases where there's no problem of Yayin Nesech because of that residual gzera of Mishum benotehem. So Amar Rav Chia Barei Da'aba Bar Nachmani, Amar Rav Chista Amar Rav, from Rilah, and some say that this was the Mesorah. Amar Rav Chista Amar Ze'iri Halacha Ki Rabbi Shimon. So here they're paskening like Rabbi Shimon that when we say in our Mishnah Mutar, it's not only Mutar Ba'ana, it means Mutar B'Shtia. Ikad Amre, there's some who have it in this version. Amar Rav Chista Amarli Abba Bar Chanan Hachi Amar Ze'iri Halacha Ki Rabbi Shimon. Again, another version of how the Mesorah happened. They think that Halacha is Ki Rabbi Shimon. And then the Stam Gemara says, Vein halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. Despite the fact that we have these Amorai paskin like Rabbi Shimon, the Gemara believes, Vein halacha k'Rabbi Shimon, that halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon in this case. Now tell Chavit, V'zarka b'chamato l'bor, Zemai ma'aseh v'yakshiro. Amar Avashi, Kol shebizav tamei, anything with regards to a zav would make the person or item that he comes into contact with tamei, Bobe kochavim mosei yayin esech. If an Olei Kohen takes the same action, then it would make the wine into Yayin Nesech. So just like when a Zav throws something at someone else, that doesn't make the other person Tamei. Similarly, when a Goy throws an object into the Yayin, into the boar, he's not going to make it into Yayin Nesech. As Rashi is careful to note over here, the comparison here between Zav and the Yayin Nesech is only with regards to Negiyah, direct contact. When it comes to Heset, for instance, by the Zav, if he moves something through another object, that would be considered to be Tamei. The object would be Tamei. On the other hand, by Yayin Nesech, it would not consider it to be Yayin Nesech. So, for instance, in the case where you had the node, the canteen, where it wasn't full and you're moving around the item, whether it was Masa or Heset, because you're moving the Yayin, for Zav, that would make it Tamei. Yet for us, it's not considered to be Yayin Nesech. So Rashi makes that point that the comparison here that Rav Ashi is drawing is uniquely associated with Nagi'ah. And as Tosfos points out, Al Koli Karosho Klal Zeh. The whole purpose of this principle that Rav Ashi is making is Lo Ba'alu Lahetir Zrika. He's just coming to tell you that Zrika does not make Yayin Nesech, similar to the fact that Zrika by the Zav doesn't make the other party Tameh, so to the Zrika by the Ovei Kochavim is not going to make the Gat or the Boar into Yayin Nesech. And that the Bali Tosfot said is the halacha, v'chein halacha, shim zarak even o kol davar liyayin, if he throws any object into the wine, v'afilu b'kavana, even intentionally, shu mutar b'shtia, that is mutar to drink, kein ore Rav Yosef Tov Aleim. So that's the view of Rav Yosef Tov Aleim. The kol davar Rav Rav Moshe Mikutzi, the smag, another and says, du'atin shim zarak l'tocho ma'im, and if he threw water in there, shalo b'kavanat m'ziga, not intending to dilute it, but simply to throw water in there, she mutar b'shtia, that is also permissible to drink. So from here, you see the Bali Tosfot conclude that throwing object in is similar to like the zav, and that the zav, kol shebizav tahor, anything that by a zav would be tahor, like zrika of the zav, would not affect the person who's touched by the item that he throws. But we kochavim, and say yayin nesech. Okay, kochavim, it doesn't make it into yayin nesech. And that's why when he throws the barrel into the gat over here, it isn't a problem. Eitve Ravuna the Ravashi. So that's Ravashi's position. But Ravuna says our Mishnah is problematic for Ravashi. Not all the Chavit is our Kabechamato the Boar. when he picks up the barrel and throws it in there out of anger, in, only if he was angry do we say that it's not problematic. Shalom v'chamato, if he was a sound mind and level-headed when he did it, sounds like, well, that it wouldn't have been okay, and that it would be asur. So my answer is, hotam t'ka'azil minei u'minei. It's a case here where he is rolling it all the way there. Rashi explains over here, sholeichu mitgalgela kli kol sha'a. He's rolling the barrel all the way down to the bor. Sha'ideishu mitgalgolo morido the bor. Since he's rolling it down towards the bor and gets very close to it, hilkach shalo b'chamatolo, t'chashina dilma naga. We worry about the fact that he might have come into contact with it. What Rashi differentiates over here is the difference between zrika from afar. When you throw something at the bor from afar, there we don't worry about it because that's like the zav and it's completely okay. It's tahor by the zav, it'll be completely okay by Yanessa. The other hand, when he throws it from close proximity, there we worry about the possibility that when he throws it from close proximity, he might actually come into contact with the wine or touch the wine, and therefore it's problematic. So the distinction Rashi makes, and the Rashbam quotes in the name of Rashi and backs this up, that there's a chiluk ben zorek mikenegdo, the zorek milerachok. Difference between throwing something right in front of you versus throwing something from a distance. But the Bayitus will say, miu lo yitachein, kid appreciate the help. Says that's definitely incorrect. Like I already explained before, the Baal Tosafot actually addressed this in yesterday's daf. When he brought them to the Gat in the Sal, over there the Baal Tosafot were questioning the position of the Rashbam. One of their questions on the Rashbam is from our case over here, which says that when you throw something in, it is mutar. And the Rashbam differentiated, like Rashi does over here, between throwing something in from afar versus throwing in something from close proximity. The Baal Tosafot in yesterday's daf say that that doesn't make sense. That distinction is never found in the Gemara, and we never say such a thing. Tosafot back on Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, also over there, and speaking about Nigia Yadei Devar Acher, notes this Gemara and says that Rashi explained it, that the difference is between throwing from afar and throwing from close. The Baal Tosafot say that's not the case. The difference between the cases is when you throw from afar, then it's Mutar de Gamre. When you roll it all the way up to the bor, it becomes negia ayadei davar acher. It becomes a negia through another medium. Now, negia ayadei davar acher for Rashi doesn't matter, because over there it's problematic according to Rashi. But Tosafot, the Shita To, there in Zayin Amud Aleph says, negia ayadei davar acher, shelo bikavana, unintentionally is totally fine. Intentionally is problematic. So that's what Tosafot notes over here. What it means to the kaza minei minei means that he rolls it all the way into the bor. He's still in contact with the barrel when it goes into the bor. In that case, it's equivalent of negia yadei davar acher. So when he's angry, then it's shalobi kavana. Because he was angry, that's why he rolled it in there and threw it in there. He wasn't intentionally to touch the wine, he just was angry and he threw it in there. On the other hand, if it's rolling it in there and he's not angry, that means that he's coming into contact with the wine, bikavana. Intentionally. And there will be a problem of negia yadei davar acher. That's how Tosafot explains the end of the Gemara over here, where he says that, even though he's in contact with the barrel all the way till it goes into the bor, then don't say the command in oksobiado elad samuchabor. Don't tell me, and don't read the Gemara over there like Rashi, which is that he's rolling it until close to the bor, and then he lets go over, then he throws it in. Omikan melech zarka, and then he released it and threw it. Dein ze lashon minei uminei. That is not the lashon of minei uminei, and therefore he disagrees with Rashi's interpretation of minei uminei over here, which means he rolls it until the bor and then releases it or throws it. Baitosma said, minei uminei means that he rolls it all the way till it's in the wine there. And that's one of their proofs to their position that negia yadei davar acher, shelo bikavana, is not considered to be negia. And Rashi, again, the Shitato, thinks that that is problematic. But it's negia yadei davar acher, shelo bikavana. Therefore, Rashi explains that he stopped before the boar and then tossed it in. And he makes a distinction between tossing it in from close proximity, where there's a chashash of negia, there we won't allow it. Whereas, when it's further away, when there's no chashash of nigiyah, there it'll be mutar legamre, like Ravashi's statement. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Samach Aleph, Amud Aleph.